positive remarks on operational approaches to quantum theory. So, and we are witnessing now, in the last 5 to 10 years, a significant progress in the understanding of quantum theory within the operationalism, where the primitive laboratory operations, such as preparations, transformations, measurements, are taking a basic ingredients of the theory. And this picture has been taken from the Lucien Hardy 2001 work that actually initialized this research. Now, one of the reasons to continue with this research is, of course, to provide an honest answer to students' penetrating questions, where the Hilbert space comes from, or why do we have a Schrödinger equation. But the other one is not less interesting, and this is that at one point when you have a reconstruction from some basic axioms, you can play around, as Marcus said yesterday, with weakening some of these axioms or changing some of the axioms and going into the broader class of theories. And don't go back to laboratory and try to really test quantum mechanics against these alternatives. So one thing that remained after Hardy's 2001 theory paper was that actually if you remove these implicit axioms, and you heard about that yesterday, you really have a chance to go to the higher order theories and to look quantum theory just as one special case embedded in higher order theories. So if you think about the single system and one-bit system, meaning that there is only two orthogonal states, perfectly distinguishable in a measurement, then you can think about the classical bit as just a bit with 1 degree of freedom, then real bit, a bit based on real amplitudes to be embedded in a two-dimensional sphere, qubit in three-dimensional sphere in a Bloch vector representation, but you can think about a generalized bit embedded in higher-dimensional spaces. Now, that was the starting point for the work of Dakich and myself, actually looking if these theories really can be consistently developed in a certain framework based on a certain set of axioms. And the answer was actually not, and basically what you end up with just the classical and quantum theory, and these are the set of the axioms. I will not go into details, I just want to complete the story from yesterday. The first axiom is orthogonal decomposition, and it says that any state of one-bit system can be prepared by mixing two perfectly distinguishable states. One can think about these axioms as saying that every state, there is always one measurement in which every quantum state looks just like a classical bit, just like a mixture of these classically distinguishable, perfectly distinguishable states. The two other axioms, reversibility, local tomography, are very common in all approaches. The second one, axiom says between any two pure states there exists a reversible transformation. Local tomography says that the state of composite system is completely determined by local measurements on its subsystems and their correlations. And the last one is the one that I think is the strongest one, but also nicely captures some of the features of quantum theory. It's a subspace axiom that says that all one-bit systems are equivalent, and it was also present already in the Hardy's proof. And what this really means is if you compare, for example, the state space, set of measurements, transformations, and states for the single bit, it's the same as for the system that is spanned up by any two orthogonal states. And in particular, I can choose two elementary systems and take the product state 0, 0, and 1, 1, and again I have this full state space just like for the single system. So what is nicely about that, this already tells you immediately that such theory should have some kind of entanglement. And if you think really about this in quantum states, then all except the north and the south pole are entangled states. But the very important point is that this is true irrespectively of our classical notion of localizability. So it doesn't matter where these two individual systems are, the state space is equivalent. And it takes almost no time to prove, actually, that having this state space, you basically obtain the Bell's theorem, and even the cosinus law if you think about a specific state of a single type. So that's all what I want to say about the reconstruction. And I'm coming back now to the main subject of my talk. So in this operational approach, there is one ingredient that was always assumed to pre-exist independent of measurements, and in a certain sense it was not treated operationally. And this one ingredient is common in all reconstructions and was already assumed partially also as axiom in reconstruction, and this is the fact there is a definite causal structure. What I mean is that there is unidirectional signaling from the device that is a preparation towards the device that is a measurement. And here is just a simplified picture of the more general picture that we saw yesterday as a quantum circle, for example. This is the simplest quantum circle. But what is assumed is that there is a beginning of this circle, there is an end of this circle, there is no loops in this circle, and one can think about having a picture of the system traveling from left to right and carrying some information at the end. The signaling is only from the preparation to the measurement. Now, this immediately, I don't know, it spoils every my possibility to make a surprise because it's open always the entire transparency. Let me pull this way, yeah? So, this immediately raises certain questions. Is definite causal structure a necessary preassumption, or does it follow from some primitive concepts? We used, actually, in quantum theory to be very careful by assuming features to exist before and independent of measurements. After all, that led us to Bell's theorem, Cochen-Speckle type of theorems, and it's at least thinkable that the same may apply for assuming definite causal structures. Secondly, the interesting question would be, is it possible to extend the operational approach to quantum mechanics such that the notions of an underlying space-time or causal structure are not assumed, but may somehow emerge in this operational approach? And perhaps the most interesting would be what new phenomenology can follow from such an operational approach applied also on the causal structures. So in order to answer these questions, we have a goal. And goal is to find a general framework from probabilistic theories with no pre-existing causal structures. And to my knowledge, this goal was also first formulated by Lucy and Hardy's 2005 paper, also motivated by going towards finding a framework for quantum gravity. Now, here's the outline of the rest of my talk. I will first introduce the set of games, rules, operational approach in which I want to define the problem. Then I will speak about some well-known standard quantum mechanical situations in which we do have definite causal structure and causally ordered correlations. For example, if we have space-like measurements, we talk about having a joint state. If we have time-like correlations, we speak about having a channel from Alice to Bob, or this channel could be more general with memory or not. Then I will introduce the framework for correlations without assuming definite causal structure, and finally present a causal game in which I will show that there is a winning strategy to win this game if you have correlations that are in certain sense not causal and cannot be understood as any of these causally ordered situations mentioned before. And finally, I will conclude. I should mention that this, some of these ideas also were present in the recent works of the Pavia group for the motivation of the whole project. So let me now define now what I mean with the operational approach towards also taking the question whether causal structure can be understood within this approach. We think about an observer, an Alice, closed in a laboratory. There is two, So there is two instances of time. So they are, that's the reason why we introduce here the clocks. These two instances of times actually distinguish two things, namely the entrance of the system into the laboratory. There is some input that enters the laboratory. Then some certain operation, transformation on this system will be performed. And afterwards, at a later time, the system will exit the laboratory. So there is a very weak notion of time. I'm not assuming here that there is a continuous time between entering and exiting the laboratory. There is just two instances that should be distinguished. The important thing is that the laboratory interacts with the environment only through this process that has been now described, and there is no other interactions with the outside world. So the laboratory is in some certain sense isolated completely from the environment. And what is also important is that actually this picture that you have seen now is the similar or the equivalent what is usually assumed in any circuit model where you have a gate and we have some wires entering this gate and going outside from the gate. So basically hidden implicitly there is these two instances of entering the gate and exiting the gate. And finally, what will be interesting in defining the probabilities for different transformation. Because at the end of the day, these transformations will be probabilistic in the probabilistic framework. And we would like to have a list of all probabilities for all different possible transformations. Every transformation, as you see here on the picture, is also connected with some outcome, some flash of the lamp, or any other classical record. And what we would like to have the whole full list of these different probabilities for different transformation. We call this process, because the process now in this case includes not only, for example, detection of some result on the state that enters the laboratory, but also some re-preparation of the new state that goes outside of the laboratory. And so this word should somehow distinguish from the world state, but it has very similar analog meaning as a full list catalog of our knowledge in Schrödinger sense. Now, all what I have said so far for a single laboratory actually can be applied for the two laboratories. And at the end of the day, I will consider correlations between Alice and Bob's outcomes. So I, again, have a similar situation of the system entering Bob's laboratory, performing some transformation, getting some classical information out of that, and sending after the transformation the system outside of laboratory. Now, the important thing is that we will assume no pre-existing causal structures between these two guys, and in particular, we will not assume that they share some pre-existing background time. The object we are interested in is, again, the full list of all probabilities for the set of operations on Alice's side, MJA for the JA outcome, and NJB for GB outcome on both sides. So these are the joint processes. The processes is the list of the all probabilities for joint transformations. Now, this is a very roughly the framework in which we will set our rules. And here are a few examples that are known from the standard quantum mechanics that can be described in this framework. The first one is sharing a joint state between Alice and Bob. What we think about that is that there is an entangled state. The part goes to Alice, the other one to Bob. They perform some transformations for measurement, and they can eventually re-prepare their local states. This is the situation with the shared joint state, and there is obviously no signaling here. The situation where the signal is allowed is, for example, channel from Alice, from Bob to Alice in this case. Bob receives some state, prepares some measurements, transform this state, send it away from the laboratory. It will be sent further to the entrance of the Alice laboratory. She may perform some transformation and send it away. So this is a sending a state from Bob to Alice and allow signaling. Similarly, just for completeness, the roles of Alice and Bob can be reversed. And again, we have a situation where the signaling is possible now from Alice to Bob side. The most general situation which you can consider is a channel with memory, where you can think about that there is some entangled state. One part of this entangled state is sent to the Alice laboratory. She can make some transformation on it. And the other part is together with the transformed first part then sent, for example, to Bob's laboratory, who can make then further transformations. This case, again, allows signaling from Alice to Bob, but you can even go beyond these four cases and think about most general causally ordered situations in which you have some classical mixtures of all these four cases. The way how I think about these classical mixtures is perhaps there is actually one of these cases is taking place, but we do not have, we don't know which one, and we have to have some ignorance about the true state of affair and therefore describe these situations, processes with some classical mixture of well-defined processes. Now, this is a part of the operational approach was defined, and we look at some known situation within this operational approach. Now we want to go a little bit beyond that. And in order to go beyond that, we have to specify it. What kind of transformation we assume that there exist in local laboratories. So the main premise of our approach is that locally laboratories as described by quantum mechanics. What I mean with this is that the transformations that can be transformed, that can be performed in local laboratories are complete positive trace non-increasing maps. So what we think about that there is some system from the Hilbert space H2, it enters at some point, undergoes some transformation, and gets out and could be a different dimensions of the dimensional Hilbert space of H1 because the system can include some ancillas. The ancillas could be removed in the process or added or whatever. Furthermore, these systems does not need to be of the same nature. It could be, you know, electron, positron coming out, and so on. So what we assume is, of course, full validity of quantum mechanics at the local level in both laboratories. So we do assume the way how we add up CP maps in quantum mechanics. In particular, we assume that probability for any convex mixture of CP maps transformed into the convex mixture of probabilities, which is very similar in more general operational view, and that distributivity is valid and that the probability of sum of CP maps is equal to the sum of the probabilities. One can go into even a more general framework when one think about the operational approach where the local laboratories are not described by quantum mechanics. This is not what we are doing. So finally, what we can derive from this general framework that probabilities are linear function of CP maps. And all what I have said now for the single laboratory, I can do for the joint probabilities for two laboratories, two parties. Again, I have the situation that the local laboratories are described by quantum mechanics. Of course, these Hilbert space all can be of different dimensions. CP maps are transformation from LHA2 to LH1. You might wonder why we have chosen this index 2 for the input and not 1. This is when you made a decision at the beginning. You stick to your old computation until the end. And it's very hard now to rewrite everything. Okay. There is no other deep reason for that. So please always have in mind that the input is described with the index 2. Now, if you keep this linear structure coming from the operational approach, what you conclude that probabilities are bilinear functions of the CP maps. And the question is, of course, how to characterize the most general probability distribution, how to characterize these joint probabilities. Now, one way, which is where it's very much used in quantum information theory, is to connect CP maps with positive operators, bipartite positive operators, through Choi-Yamolkowski isomorphism. And I just want to remind you on the main idea of this isomorphism. So this is a CP maps from LH2 to LH1. And this could be associated with a bipartite positive operator in the tensor product of the two spaces. The way how you do it is actually you start with a maximal entangled state, phi plus, defined here as a sum over II, and then you apply a map, which is a tensor product of your CP map and identity map, and that's the way how you get to the bipartite positive operator, which is usually known, which is non-normalized. Here are just two examples. If you want to describe, and this is what we will use later, first projection on some state, and then re-preparation of possibly different, here is the same state, then this CP map can be represented by Choi-Yamolkowski's as a tensor product of these two pure states. The other one is where you simply re-prepare a new state, sigma. This will be a sigma times identity. Now, we are coming back to our problem. We have two important observations so far. One of them being that bipartite probabilities are linear functions on CP maps, and secondly, that these CP maps can be represented by bipartite positive operators. So simply combining these two observations, we can think that bilinear function of CP maps is actually bilinear functions of positive operators. And that's the way how we will work actually with these matrices on the right-hand side. So whenever you have a bilinear function on some vectors, you can introduce a dual vector and by a scalar product define these bilinear functions, just like we did here via trace, where this dual vector is associated with a new matrix from this space. And this matrix is actually the main tool or the main object of our investigation. We call this process matrix because this is the object, mathematical object, that will give us all this set of probabilities in our catalog of our knowledge in the process. Now, what do we impose on this object? So far, you can think that we only have to have probabilities that are positive on local CP maps. So one alone out of this assumption would say that it is positive on pure tensor products, which means that this matrix does not need necessarily to be positive itself. However, we do assume a little bit more than that. We assume that Alice and Bob can share an ancillary entangled states. Why? Because even if they share ancillary entangled states, this does not fix the causal structure. You can add ancillary entangled states both for a channel from Alice and Bob or to Bob to Alice, and this will not change the direction of the signaling. So we do assume that it is possible for Alice and Bob. However, if you assume that they can even share an ancillary entangled state and still require positivity of probabilities on all possible local CP maps, then they can also apply such a CP maps that they effectively perform a teleportation on the initial state, initial systems, which has to be positive because the probabilities are positive, which gives finally requirement on the positivity for the object W. The similar way of thinking and proof of this in another framework was done in this Barnum et al. Paper in 2005. Now, this is first assumption that this probabilities, that this matrix is positive. The second one, which gives some structure to these Ws, is that probability must be one on all complete positive trace preserving maps, because they are related to summing up all possible local results on Ellis and Bob sites. So if you assume this additionally, then this probability must be 1 for all, here's missing tensor product, for all that kind of operators where this epsilon Ellis and epsilon Bob tells us that these are CPTP, or complete positive trace preserving maps. So that means that they are not only positive, but they also assume, they also satisfy this set of requirements. Here's missing this index epsilon, but this is equivalent to assuming that they are actually CPTP maps. So there are two important assumptions. Now, having this now framework, we can go back and look at the situations in quantum mechanics and look if we can recover with this new object all known situations in which we do have definite causal order. So one of them, again, I'm coming back to this bipartite state. If Ellis and Bob share a joint state, then this situation indeed can be described with this W matrix of the certain form, identity times rho transposed on exactly matrices that correspond to inputs A2 and B2. And basically what you get is a probability for the joint measurement or transformation on this initial potentially entangled state. The other case is, for example, channel from Bob to Ellis, in which case this W has a little bit different form. This corresponds to the initial state that is sent to Bob. Then there is a channel represented by this bipartite matrix, channel epsilon. And finally, we have some transformation of Ellis side. And this W state plugged into our formula exactly give the probability for having a composition of first Bob transformation, then channel, and Ellis transformation. And you can do the same, similar, more involved a little bit for the channel with memory, in which case this W is not separable in this Hilbert space. So you have the situation which are, again, known in quantum mechanics. Now, in order to go beyond these cases, and actually to tell you about the most interesting situation, I knew it just to introduce a little bit of notation. What here is meant with this A, like implies B, that A is in the causal past of B. So A can signal to B. So I will use this symbol just to the situation where we can have a channel from A to B, like A can signal to B. The similarity is for the inverse order where B can signal to B, to A. So B is in the causal past of A. And negation of this relation, so A not implied B, is when the A is not in the causal past of B. So A cannot signal to B, and this corresponds actually to two situations. If A cannot signal to B, then either B signals to A, or they are causally independent because they share just a bipartite state. So this will refer to both of these situations. Similarly, for if we replace Bob and Ellis, interchange their roles. And finally, if A not B and B not A are both satisfied, this will correspond only to one single situation where A and B are causally independent. Now, if you think about this W, as a matrix, we can always decompose this in a Hilbert-Schmidt basis. And just to have some track about possible terms that appear in this decomposition, I will call all these terms that, for example, only Hilbert space A1 is non-trivially, where there is an operator applied only non-trivially in A1. I will call this type 1 term. If there are two Hilbert spaces in which we have non-trivial these operators, I will call this type A1, A2, and so on. Now, these two assumptions that I introduced in a few slides before, namely that probabilities are positive and that we have probability 1 on all CPTP maps, tells us that only following terms can appear in this W matrix. So what we have here is, for example, that B not A is satisfied either if we have a bipartitive states, so either this situation, or that Alice indeed can signal to Bob, which is A1, B2, for example, term, or A1, A2, B2 will be a term that is associated, again, that Alice can signal to Bob, but through the channel with memory. The cases that where the roles of Alice and Bob are interchanged are not shown is the, here. So basically, all the other terms that do not appear, like, for example, A1, A2, are in disagreement with one or the other assumption on the probabilities. Now, I'm coming to the most interesting part of the talk, I guess. So the question is what is the most general causal separable situation? As before, what I introduced, this notation, we can think about either that B cannot signal to A, or that A cannot signal to B. Having all these possibilities like signaling or causal independence. And now we can think about the most general W that would respect causal, definite causal order as a classical mixture of all these cases. And the real question is whether we can have some Ws that cannot be written in this way. And consequently, we will have a W which do not respect definite causal order. So one can answer this in a mathematical way, proving that there are some Ws which are in agreement with the two assumptions but cannot be written in that way. The other way, which is more interesting, is to think about the causal game, to think about some communication task in which we will prove that if you have Ws not of that form, you can do better. So here is the causal game. There is, again, two characters, Alice and Bob. These blue lines should suggest that there is some notion, very weak notion of time that I introduced before in each of the local laboratories, namely that they can distinguish between entrance and exit of the system. And here's the game. Alice is given a bit A, and Bob is given a bit B. So what should they return, for example, to some potential referee, is that Alice should produce X and Bob should produce Y, which are their best guesses for the value of the bit given to the other. So let's concentrate for the moment on Alice's side. Alice gets some system in her laboratory. She can perform some measurement on this system, and that's the only instant where she can get some new information from outside. So that, at that moment, she should be able to produce something, because that's the moment when she acquire new information, and we will require, actually, that as soon as the measurement is performed, she provides her guess about Bob's input bit B. After that, she will be given her bit A, which in some cases Bob has to guess, and she, after getting this bit A that she should send, she can then perform some re-preparation of her state and send the state away out of the laboratory. Okay? So the important restriction of the game is that guess X is produced in local time before bit A is given. And this is a kind of a restriction which might be thought as similar to the restriction of Bell game, where the two laboratories have to be space-like separated. So in this particular slide, I do not assume that the local operations are restricted to CP maps and restricted to quantum mechanics, because at the end of the game, I would like to have a statement that is theory independent, just like Bell's theorem is theory independent, given this restriction of space-like separated regions. Here is restriction given in that form. Now, the game is a little bit more subtle, because There is yet another bit given to Bob. Namely, Bob is given an additional bit, B prime, that tells him whether he should guess her bit, for example, if B prime is 1, or she should guess his bit in B prime given to 0. So he will get some system into his laboratory. Then he will be given this B prime. Depending on the B prime, he should now, he can decide in which basis to measure, which would be better for him, because depending on B prime, value of the B prime, sometimes he needs to guess Alice bit, but sometimes he needs to send his bit B, sorry. So after the entering of his system, he can decide, and depending on the value of B prime, he can decide what to measure. And after measurement, he will get some classical record. This record will be his best guess of Alice bit. Of course, if he needs to send information, then he does not care which guess he makes. After that, he will be given his bit B that he has to send to Alice, in some cases, depending on B prime. And after that, finally, the system goes away from his laboratory. Now, this game is a little bit involved, but it's very easy to understand what is the classical limit, or the limit that, for all theories in which we have causal order. How much time do I have?
10 minutes.
Okay. The goal is finally to maximize the probability for correct guess, namely to maximize this probability of success, which 1/2, because the B prime will be distributed between 1/2. Now, in B prime equal to 0, she should guess the bit of Bob. So X should be equal to B, which is given to Bob, and this is her guess. And the other case, he should guess the bit A given to Alice. Now, what is the limit in all causally ordered situations? Now, here what I mean with causally ordered situation, there is some global time that they share, and there is a signaling going from bottom to the top. So in this game, Alice will reserve some system. Then she has, on the basis of the result, she observes, give her best guess of the bit given to Bob. And this should be random because Bob is in the future. Then she is given a bit A that she has to send, in some cases, to Bob. And she indeed can send even this bit A directly to Bob. And finally, Bob can then read out this bit perfectly and give his estimate. So basically, he can guess with probability 1 in these situations. And only then he is given a bit B. Of course, there is no causal relation between this bit B and her guess, and therefore the probability in this case is simply like that. He can guess with perfect probability the bit given to Alice, but in other case, we just have 1/2, and totally we have 3/4. So can we beat this game, this bound, with some causally non-causal correlations, in a sense, or the correlations that are not, does not belong to this class of causally ordered? Yes, we can. And what they need to do is to share the W of this form. Now, if you plug this into our probabilities and you allow Alice and Bob to perform certain CP maps, then you can basically get to the probability of success, which is given like this form, and clearly larger than 3/4, which already proves that this process written here cannot be realized as a probability mixture of causally ordered situations, because in all causally ordered situations, we have the limit 3/4. Now, what is really interesting here, and I have no real understanding, but you see that this number is really very much like Zielinski bound for quantum correlations, and this is also very much as a bound of, on the Bell game. When you rewrite CHSH in probabilities, not in correlation functions. Now, I understand that at this moment I should be more explicit here in this step two because the miracle occurs, but one possibility to demystify this result is to go today to the poster of Fabio. Maybe I just run through this proof give you an impression that there's nothing special. That's an Alice CP map. So this is basically the measurement in Z basis and decoding the information and encoding, again, in Z direction. What this should suggest that if we sum up our Alice results, what basically Bob receives is some quantum state of his side that, from which he can extract the information with this probability. And in other situation, when he wants to send the bit, then he makes a little, also a CP map, which is a very simple tensor product between measuring X and encoding Z basis. And I understand this is not possible now to follow, but at the end of the day, Alice on her side receives effectively a quantum state from which she can decode Bob's bit with the same probability as in the previous case. So now, just before conclusions, it's, of course, interesting question. Is this just, you know, a theoretical thing and you're playing around with some numbers, or we can really find somewhere in nature these non-causal processes? And I wish I would know the answer to that. There is some suggestions, one coming from the form of this W, because W itself can be seen as a CP map. And then the entire process, this W, is such that information is sent backwards in time, like through some noisy channel, because it takes the output indices from the local CP maps and fed this W box and gets out actually the system with the indices that are inputs for the local maps. So in certain sense, if you would have a very strange, not like Deutsch or satellite, a type of closed time-like curves, you could have something like what we need. The other thing is this W perhaps describes in some very vague sense kind of a superpositional space-time, and I cannot say anything more than just this bold speculation. Now, here are the conclusions, and that's where I end. What I have not shown that in the classical limit, so basically look at some CP map that are diagonal, you obtain that all correlations are causally ordered, and I think that will be also in the poster. So if you want to speculate, you can think about that only in some certain classical limit you obtain the processes that we see nowadays as a causally ordered. This is, without mentioning explicitly, obviously this framework is a unified framework for both signaling, if you want time-like, and non-signaling correlations. But the most important maybe message to take out of this talk is that we describe situation where causal ordering between laboratory operations is not definite, and this suggests that maybe causal ordering might not be a necessary element of quantum theory. Of course, the big question is what one needs to do in the laboratory to see these processes, and can one use this for quantum information? So with this, I want to finish. This is Fabio Costa. Don't forget to go to his poster. This is Ognar Oreshkov, and thank you for your attention.
Questions? First one over there.
So we considered some time ago a situation like yours, but the main difference is that we didn't have a task like yours in which these kind of non-causal maps can help to improve with respect to quantum processes. But I have another question for you, which is the following. So you consider just localizable transformations, the ones in which Alice and Bob use local channels and they may share entanglement. One can prove that those CP maps you showed act perfectly well also on non-signaling channels, which are a more general class than these ones. So my guess would be that you can even beat zero-sum bound in this task if you use such a channel instead of a localizable one. Did you think about this?
So we didn't think about that, but we have no proof that this is really the maximum. So this is an open question. So if you have such impression, it will be nice to look at if you can go even beyond this square root of 2. Are you talking about your paper in which you have some superpositions of wires in a sense that connects the gates, the one of going beyond quantum computation? Or?
Yes, that one. Because the idea is that with these no-signaling boxes, you can implement a PR box in the end. So you can beat zero-sum bound. So maybe we can discuss this.
Okay.
Any more? I think Giulio is the second hand before.
Well, I have a comment that is related to Paolo's comment. So one thing is that, I mean, I like the game that you showed in the end, but the parts before, I think it is important to stress that these ideas are not appearing here for the first time. Because, for instance, the map, the idea of the maps from quantum operations to other quantum operations or numbers, which is one of the first things you consider, was published in 2008 in a paper on European physics letters, and so this was about transforming maps, preserving the probabilistic interpretation.
But if I understand, I think you still have correlations that are always causally ordered. Am I right?
In the first papers.
Yes.
But then there has been other papers later where we pointed out to the possibility of non-causal correlation. And the case of beyond the computation, which unfortunately I think is an unfortunate title for something that was about superposition of causal order.
Yes.
It contains an explicit example.
Yes, we look at this beyond, so yes. That's why I mentioned Pavia group when I mentioned this motivation for this work. But in the beyond quantum computation, when you look at this like an example of superposition of, for example, different order of some operation, think about photon going to the beam splitter and then having one or the other order, we could not recover these correlations because whenever you trace out this degrees of freedom, it seems at the end that you have classical correlations on other degrees of freedom. So that's one of the things that we are not sure that whether one can use simply this idea to come to this. Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's why we are. Yes, that's why I'm here only on the non-causal order.
Time for just one or two more, I think. Are there any?
Tony?
So in your game, you have this B-primed, but it seemed like the game would make sense without it as a game.
Sorry? It seems
in your game, you have this extra bit B-primed, which sort of
yes.
breaks the symmetry.
Yes.
But it seems like the game would make sense without it, where you just score them on the sum of P of X equals A and P plus P of Y equals B.
So if you think about having this more symmetrical, if you get rid of that, then you can show that you cannot have this one. That this is one which is a causal order. So we tried to symmetrize this, but we couldn't.
So you just don't get any interesting results.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, one more, if there are any. Time or no? Okay. Well, let's thank Chaslav again.